One of my favorite stories from the ancient tradition of the desert wisdom of the earliest church in the fourth century is attributed to one of the ancient abbots, Abba Pambo, who had a monastery in the Skeet region of Egypt. And the story goes that the archbishop, or what they also called the pope at the time, the archbishop Theophilus, was coming to visit. And the brothers were very excited about the archbishop's visit. And the story goes like this. Once Theophilus of holy memory, the archbishop of Alexandria, came to Skeet. The brothers assembled there said to Abba Pambo, "Say a word to the Pope that his soul may be edified here." And the old man answered, "If he is not edified by my silence, he certainly will not be edified by my speech." So I'm just going to stand here now for the next 20 minutes, and you all can be edified by my silence. Wouldn't that be great? But it turns out, as much as I am committed to and drawn to silence, it turns out that there are times in life when it is, in fact, the right thing to do to speak. Probably fewer times than most of us like to think, and probably often we'd be well served by silence rather than all the many words we tend to pour out. But there are times when words need to be spoken. And Isaiah the prophet understood this, and so in our first reading this morning from Isaiah chapter 62, the prophet says, For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent. Something, he suggests, needs to be said, and I am going to say it. There are contexts that need words. There are times when things need to be spoken. The thing that draws the prophet to think that it's time to speak appears to have been a particular context in the history of the people of Israel. The Jews had been in exile in Babylon for 100 years, over 100 years. A terrible devastation had occurred to their nation. Jerusalem had been razed, the land had been left desolate, and the people were carried away into exile, cut off from the place that they revered, cut off from that place, Jerusalem, where they believed the presence of God uniquely and powerfully dwelled. The temple had been razed, the walls had been flattened, they had all been carried off into this dreadful, heartbreaking exile, and most of them, almost all of them, had died in exile. It was only their children and their children's children who were left, and they had just the vague memory. Maybe a few of them and others had just heard stories of the greatness and the glory of Israel and the beauty of Jerusalem and the might of the temple. But then a miracle occurred, and the Persian king Darius conquered Babylon, and he believed that he was called to allow the people of Israel, the Jews, to return to their homeland. It was a great event, something to be mightily celebrated, such a thrilling thing that finally they were going to get to go in pilgrimage together up to the holy city, return to that place that was the location of God's power and God's glory, and be restored to their greatest wonder and mystery and the beauty and truth that they had always known was embodied in this place. And so, they return. But things were not as they had anticipated. Things were not as they had hoped. Nothing had been rebuilt. The land had been left desolate. It was overgrown with weeds and vegetation. The temple lay in rubble. The walls had been destroyed and were left in rubble on the ground. Their dwelling places had been destroyed, and nothing had been done to bring this great city and this mighty nation back to its former glory. And the people had come back, and all they saw before them, they didn't see worship and praise and beauty and all that goodness they'd anticipated and been told was there. All they saw was hard work. Years of endless labor to look forward to reestablish themselves in this desolate land. And so they experienced this terrible, wrenching sense of being abandoned. The prophet says, a time is coming, though, when you shall no more be termed forsaken, and your land shall no more be termed desolate. But now, at this point, they feel utterly forsaken. They feel desperately desolate, abandoned, alone, and with no real hope for the future. It's into that context, it seems to me, that we might want to hear a word. We might want to hear a voice that raises up another possibility. We might want to hear words that speak words of hope and speak words of beauty. It's into that situation, that context where we feel hopeless, that perhaps hearing tones of promise and blessing can perhaps reignite something within us that allows us to believe again that we can experience the glory and the wonder for which our hearts long. So, what is the word that we need to hear? The prophet says to these desolate people, "You shall be a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. You shall be called, my delight is in her, and your land married. For the Lord delights in you, and your land shall be married." You might hear a kind of faint echo in those words if you were here last Sunday and if you heard Tracy's sermon. Because in Luke chapter 3, at the baptism of Jesus, Luke tells us, when all the people were baptized, and when Jesus also had been baptized and was praying, the heaven was opened, and the Holy Spirit descended upon Jesus in bodily form like a dove, and a voice came from heaven, "You are my Son, the Beloved. With you, I am well pleased." Sounds very similar to the words of the prophet Isaiah. But there's a difference, and I'm not quite sure what to do with the difference. I don't know how Jewish people hear Isaiah 62, verses 3 and 4. But the thing that interests me is the verb tenses. The verb tenses in the prophecy of Isaiah are all future. You shall be a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. You shall be no more termed forsaken, and your land shall be no more termed desolate, but you shall be called my delight. The voice that Jesus heard said, "You are my son, the beloved. With you, I am well pleased." Everything changes when you hear those words in the present tense. You are my beloved. With you, I am well pleased. You are a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. You are my delight. My delight is in you, and you are married to the beauty and the goodness and the truth of God in Jesus Christ. Jesus is hearing and wants us to hear a present fact, not a future hope. He wants us to hear today that we are God's beloved. He wants us to hear at this moment that we are God's delight, that God cherishes every molecule of our being and every part of who we are. Tracy pointed out last week, and it's a very important point, that there are many voices out there in the world, and there are many voices in here, in me, and in each of us. And some of those voices are not telling me that I am a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord. Some of those voices are not telling me that I am a royal diadem in the hand of my God. Some of those voices are not telling me that God's delight is in me, and that the Lord takes delight in my being. So the question is, and the question Tracy posed to us last week is, which voice am I going to listen to? Now, I'd like to switch the question just a tiny bit and ask, not which voice am I going to listen to, but how am I going to hear the voice that is true? How am I going to hear the voice of truth in a world where I am surrounded by voices that tell me I don't measure up, I'm not good enough, I don't really belong, I don't really fit, there's not actually much of a place for me here on this planet? How am I going to hear that voice that says, "No, my delight is in you. I am pleased with you"? Well, I can tell you that, but if you're really going to hear it, you're going to have to do something else. Earlier in Isaiah chapter 47, verse 5, the prophet has a slightly different spin on the issue of silence. In chapter 47, verse 5, the prophet Isaiah says, "Sit in silence. Go into darkness." So there are times to speak. There are times when words are necessary. But there are also times when what is needed is just to sit in silence, to be in that darkness of not knowing, of not understanding, to be in that darkness of confusion and doubt and bewilderment, to be in that place where we experience ourselves as desolate and forsaken, and where we know that we can't fix it. Because it's when we're willing to stop and be there and stop trying to make sense of it all and stop trying to figure it all out and stop trying to make it all better. It's when we're willing to just stop and be there in that place. It's then that we become sensitive to that voice of truth that speaks what is more real and more true and more enduring than all those other voices that clamor perpetually and constantly for our attention. It's in the silence and stillness that something opens inside of us that can then receive the truth. You can't think your way to this place, but you can stop and open to it. Some of you may know, if you're my friend on Facebook, you can't possibly have missed it, because all my friends on Facebook have been announcing with sadness this past week that on Thursday, Mary Oliver, the beautiful and profound American poet, died at the age of 83. And Mary Oliver was a person who spent a lot of time in quiet. She spent a lot of time alone. She spent a lot of time in God's creation, revering and honoring and delighting in God's creation. And Mary Oliver, among the many beautiful poems that she left us, left one that is titled, "It Doesn't Have to Be the Blue Iris." This is not the poem that's in your pew leaflet. That's a bonus you get to look at when you get home. This is her poem, "It Doesn't Have to Be the Blue Iris." Mary Oliver writes, "It doesn't have to be the blue iris. It could be weeds in a vacant lot or a few small stones. Just pay attention. Then patch a few words together and don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but the doorway into thanks and a silence in which another voice may speak." Isn't that great? A silence in which another voice may speak. That's why the prophet said, "Sit in silence and go into the darkness," because that's the place where another voice speaks and where we begin to become able to hear that which is more true and more real about who we are. See, what the prophet promises the people of Israel is that they are going to receive the gift of a new identity. He says, "You shall be called by a new name that the mouth of the Lord will give you." That's what we need. We need a new name. We need a name that doesn't call us not good enough, that doesn't call us doesn't measure up, that doesn't call us didn't make the grade, that doesn't call us not pretty enough, not strong enough, not big enough, not any of that. Our new name, the new name that is spoken by the mouth of the Lord and is heard in the silence of our hearts, that new name is just beloved. That's all. There's nothing else you need to know. There's nothing else you need to claim. There's nothing else you need to root and ground the deepest part of your being in other than, in the midst of desolation, in the midst of darkness, in spite of suffering, through the pain, that voice of God speaks in the silence, saying to each of us, "You are loved, you are beloved, you are cherished, you are cared for by the goodness and beauty of life. Life is bent in your favor. I know it doesn't always look that way. I know it doesn't always feel that way. But all of the circumstances, everything that comes into life, it's all oriented towards enabling us to be the beauty and the light and the truth and the goodness that is our truest and deepest nature. Life loves you. Life cares for you. Life is working tirelessly to enable you to become the person you were created to be. Even Jesus needed to hear that voice that told him truth, that he was beloved. Even Jesus needed to go through the grueling, painful experience of isolation and desolation, driven out into the wilderness in order that his true nature might shine with the glory and the beauty of God's love for all the world to see. It's as we do that, it's as we go through that process that God's purpose is fulfilled in our lives. The prophets say, when all of that happens, then the nations shall see your vindication and all the kings your glory, and you shall be called by a new name. The mouth of the Lord will give you, and her salvation will be seen through you like a burning torch. Vindication is a terrible translation. It really means righteousness. Your alignment with God will be seen. Salvation is wholeness, it's healing. Your wholeness will be seen. When you've listened in the silence to the voice of truth, you will be seen to be whole. You will be seen to be living in tune with the purpose and the wisdom and the glory of God. And your true nature will be seen by all people. You won't have to tell anybody anything. They will be edified even by your silence, because your presence will bring into this world the knowledge of God's goodness and light.